Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
It is the APC podcast from AcmePackingCompany.com and SB Nation, part of Vox Media, and training camp-ish, something like that, is upon us. And so there's players on the field, and they're moving around, and people are trying to peek through a tarp and a fence to see what they're doing. And but it's happening, and we are here to talk about it. I am Zach Rapport, dialing it in from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I am joined today, co-piloting this rickety ship, a special guest, Justice Mosqueda on Twitter, at JewMosk. Thanks for joining me, man. How you doing?
I'm doing solid. It's been very hot. I don't know if you're getting it in New Mexico. I'm sure you are, but the heat wave out here on the West Coast, I'm in Portland, it's been pretty brutal the past couple of days. So outside of that, been fine. Just a lot of sweating. Yeah. I'm fine. I'm just wet.
It's marinating. We call it marinating. It's hot here. It's the desert, but it's also very dry, and I assume it's very humid where you are.
Yes. Yeah. That's an understatement.
The whole like stereotype of like, oh, it's a dry heat. Like, no, I moved here and it's true. It doesn't feel as bad. Also, when it's like 100 degrees and you're in the desert, you're not like, I'm not going to go hang out outside at like 12:30 in the afternoon.
Oh no, no. You guys are the reason for AC. Yeah. No, you guys got this thing figured out. At least you guys can have like shade though, right? That's the thing with like dry heat. It's like you can actually have shade and like not be burning hot, or it's like it's humid, the air is hot.
Right. No, yeah. No, shade works. It's a thing that works.
Yeah.
you're walking around on the street and then you get under a tree and you're like, oh, I feel 10 degrees cooler. That's how that's supposed to work. Whereas, I mean, I'm sure it's like this out there, but I grew up in Milwaukee and it was, yeah, like there's no hiding from the humidity. It's like you walk outside and someone just throws like a hot, wet blanket at you, basically.
Yeah, it's not great. So that's what I've been dealing with. But outside of that, pretty fun. Excited for football maybe coming back at least for a few weeks.
Maybe.
So, yeah. At least pro football.
Right, yeah. What's your over-under on like how long this is going to last?
Man, like 3 weeks, but I don't know how hard the NFL is just going to say, hey, we need these checks.
Yeah, so, no, fuck it. We're just...
I thought baseball was going to be 3 weeks too, but baseball just keeps going. Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, the Cardinals aren't playing. That's fine. We don't need the Cardinals to fulfill these television contracts right here. Yep. So we're not really worried about them.
Oh, man. Well, I don't know. Let's just get right into it, I guess. I kind of thought, like I mentioned at the top, players are, in their uniforms. They're running around. We think they're doing things that, you know, fans can't really be there. Some of them are trying to, like, peek through the fence, and we're getting like some glimpses. I gotta be honest, I teared up a little bit seeing some of these glimpses because it's like the first, I know it's like putting people at risk, but it is kind of the first little glimpse of normalcy that we've had in such a long time. But so I thought we would just kind of like talk generally about some of these players, some of what we think we might see developing here with the Packers in the next couple weeks as they get set to kick off the season. And thank you, Justice, for joining me. I wanted to start with the wide receivers because obviously many fans were not happy this offseason, not a newsflash, with how the Packers did or did not address the wide receiver. So we've kind of ridden those takes to the ground. But we haven't had you on in a long time, Justice, and the team is practicing again. Pads are on. Players are, you know, talking into microphones on Zoom. So I guess I wanted to like check in with you, Justice, on today, August 19th, sort of how you feel about the wide receiver situation in Green Bay. Are you more like, now that things are happening and like, oh, everyone loves Lazard, maybe it'll be okay? Or are you, where do you fall on the spectrum of like optimistic versus pessimistic?
I mean, they went 13-3 last year with the same wide receiver core, basically. I still think their biggest issue is still just going to be speed receiver because, I mean, Devontae can get open, but he's not necessarily like a guy teams have to plan to take the top off the defense.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's happening with, you know, MVS and his playing time at this point. Camaro's getting snaps in the red zone. And I know Irvin did a lot of stuff, especially late in the year at wide receiver slash running back, whatever you want to call that. I mean, he's kind of like a jet guy too. Just kind of get the ball in his hands, and he's a faster guy. But I don't anticipate, at least at, for the reporting right now, like, I didn't think that he was going to be, you know, like a starting wide receiver. But then you hear stuff where it's like, yeah, Aaron Rodgers, like, he liked Lazard 2 years ago. That's how he felt about Equanimeous St. Brown this past year. And, you know, who knows what happens after, you know, he comes back from injury. So maybe there's something that's going to happen there, but that's always going to be the issue.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned speed and you mentioned injury. MVS down the stretch last year, I felt like left fans a little disappointed in terms of, like, he's supposed to be the burner. And I don't know if Aaron Rodgers is overthrowing him all the time or what, but, like, to my untrained eye, and I'm going to ask your opinion on this, to my untrained eye, it seemed like, I don't know if he was working through an injury or something. He just seemed to be not as, if nothing else, not as confident in his speed. And so it slowed him down. Did you observe that at all? What do you think happened to MVS? And do you think he can provide some of that speed this year that you said was missing?
Maybe. I mean, he was definitely a guy who it seemed like maybe doghouse isn't the right term because we're talking about a player, but kind of seemed like it was in, he was in Aaron Rodgers' doghouse just because it seemed like they were not on the same page for whatever reason. Yeah. You know, be that, you know, he's running the wrong routes. He's not where he's supposed to be when on freelancing plays. It just seemed like the chemistry wasn't necessarily there. So,
yeah. Doghouse. Well, we can say timeout. Was he on timeout? What can we say instead of doghouse? Shit list. Yeah, we'll call it the shit list.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
All right. Well, let's move on to the tight end position. Is I should have like a rim shot sounder. It's kind of like a running joke on the pod, like my love of the tight end position. But I saw you on Twitter making some comments about our guy Big Bob Tonyan, and I wanted to hear it straight from you. You know, like is that sarcasm? Are you joking? Are you actually excited?
No, he's really athletic, and he was like 100 or 220 pounds when he was in college, and now he's bulking up, and I think he's going to be able to get some of these snaps. You know, they were in a weird spot where basically, like, all right, so Jimmy Graham couldn't block. All right. I don't think I'm being unfair by saying that.
Yeah. Hold on.
And then, when they had their two tight end formations, they would basically have Tonyan on the field because he was a talented pass catcher. And, you know, Mercedes is basically a unbalanced right tackle at this point, which that's fine. That's a role that you can play at the NFL level. And he's been doing it very well for like a decade, but he is who he is. So I think in terms of a full, well-rounded tight end, like developing Tonyan is probably your best option at this point. Because I know people, I mean, they just drafted, I messed up his name in our little pregame talk.
Deguara.
Yeah. I mean, he's not a Y, right? Like there's a big difference between types of tight ends. He's a weak side tight end who's going to be a very good pass catcher and give you snaps in the backfield, right? Like that's who he is. And that's a perfectly fine player. Like Greg Olsen, for example, was a weak side defender or a weak side tight end. And he, you know, made a living off of that. And that's fine. But you have to have that Ed Dixon next to Greg Olsen to do some of these run plays. And that's basically who, you know, Mercedes Lewis or whoever replaces Mercedes Lewis is going to have to be if he does take over as that premier tight end. He's not going to be George Kittle. He's going to be, you know, Greg Olsen at his peak.
Yeah.
That's what his potential is. Yeah. So,
all right, man, I'm excited about someone else hopping on the Big Bob hype train.
Let it be known, I've been here for like 3 off seasons. I've been here. I've been give him snaps, give Lazard snaps, give Camaro snaps. Not so much panned out when he actually did it, but he blocks his ass off in the red zone, and they keep him in there, especially with those like 2 back sets and everything that they do. They just keep Camaro in. He just blocks his ass off in the Lazard.
I've been on the hype train too. I mean, I don't know how you establish full credit, but I'm pretty sure I came up with the nickname Big Bob Tonyan. I'm pretty sure that was me. So
I've seen that. There's someone on Twitter with Big Blob Tonyan.
Oh yeah,
username too.
He's a funny guy. We interact sometimes. I want to stop real quickly and just do a little football 101. If you could break down something real simple, you talked about. With the tight end position, like the Y versus the weak side tight end, could you like give a quick sort of football 101 for anyone out there who doesn't know what you're talking about?
Yeah, so why? Usually, so when you see formations like on a diagram, right? An H or potentially U or W, depending on what offenses you're looking at, are usually tight ends that are off the ball, like not on the line of scrimmage. And then Ys are the guys on the line of scrimmage, which are more like traditional, I'm going to block a gap within where I line up type of guys, where H, Ws, and Us are guys who kind of move around. Those are guys who like slice across the formation for, you know, a backside block on zone or something like that, or are able to move behind the line of scrimmage and like play action on like boot plays and stuff. And usually you see them on the same side as like the X receiver, which like usually is Devontae Adams in the Packers offense. So X receiver is usually the wide receiver on the line of scrimmage. Z is the guy off. Obviously, that only assumes that there's two wide receivers on the field. So that might be like old West Coast line of thinking, but that's kind of where that originates. So Ys are, you know, the Rob Gronkowski's, the George Kittle's, where like the H's are, you know, Greg Olsen, a guy paired with like an Ed Dixon, or this probably doesn't hold up, but it's probably the best example of it, is like a guy like Aaron Hernandez or something like that, like those move tight ends.
Yeah.
Jordan Reed probably counts as like one of those guys too. Paired with like a Vernon Davis, who's very much a Y. So just kind of think of it like that.
Gotcha. So the Packers pick a guy like Jay Sternberger to be a Y?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's basically what his job is. So we'll see how he pans out. He's off the injured list, right? He was on like the COVID list for whatever reason.
COVID free.
Mm-hmm. Good for him. Him and Mason, man. The Mason one hit me hard.
Yeah.
Because I knew, you know, everything that him and his wife and his whole family had gone through, I was really praying for him to be okay, but it seems like they're okay now, thankfully.
Totally. And the same thing when that brief time where Matt Stafford was on the list as well. It's just like moments like that just put everything in such relief where you're like, geez, man, this is, you know, it's real life shit going on.
Yeah.
Well, that's very informative on the tight ends. On a similar note though, sort of transitioning in general, it seems like the Packers are kind of like stocking up on like interesting athletes, for lack of a more technical term, like to be able to, I guess, more accurately execute LaFleur's vision, I guess. I don't know. So a guy like DeGuara, who we mentioned, you know, taking Dylan in the second, John Lovett in the mix at fullback. We just talked about Tanyan and Sternberger. How different do you think that this year is going to look on offense? And I guess like how optimistic are you, if at all, about, you know, how the offense is going to perform?
So I think a lot of teams right now are realizing, like a lot of the good teams live in 11 personnel stuff, right? But a lot of teams don't have the quarterback who can do it every down from the gun. And as flashy as Aaron Rodgers is in terms of like his peak plays and like what you have to defend, I'm not necessarily sure he's like an efficiency monster the same way like a Drew Brees would be.
Right.
But like those two things are different, where you're just like, if we pass every play, can we still keep moving the sticks? Right. And the teams that aren't able to do that, I mean, I think Cleveland's a really good example of that. They tried to do that last year and then they realized, you know, Baker's not a guy who can just throw the ball 40 times a game. Yeah. Like he's just not that guy, and there's nothing wrong with that. But you can make plays and also not be like a guy who's so efficient that he needs to touch the ball 40 plays with like basically unchecked, right? I guess that's the best term. So teams that aren't comfortable with that type of situation, I think, are going back to, you know, 12 and 21 personnel. And the numbers are the first number is running backs on the field. Second number is tight end. So it's, you know, basically a two wide receiver offense. And I think, you know, we're transitioning to that, be it, you know, the Shanahan offense or, you know, Sean McVay, you know, that whole group that's doing that. And I mean, John Gruden's been living with that his entire career. So I think we're transitioning to that. I wouldn't be surprised if Green Bay started doing that more. And we even saw him do like gun split back stuff, which like, I don't think McCarthy ever ran that at all in Green Bay.
Yeah, no, totally. It's a totally different era. But in terms of like possible success, though, do you see it working out, or you're just saying like that you see the trend happening, more teams are becoming hip to it, and you don't really want to put a stake in the ground as to whether or not you think the Packers are going to be any good at it?
I guess the big thing for me would still come back to speed at wide receiver.
Yeah.
Like if you have two wide receivers, it's Devontae Adams and Alan Lazard. if Davante Adams is the fastest dude on the field, that's not necessarily a good thing, as talented as he is.
Yeah.
Or like, you look at, let me look, Rams, right? Like, they have a guy like Brandon Cooks who can take up the top off the defense. So guys like Robert Woods or Cooper Kupp, who's essentially a tight end, can get open in the lower region. So I'm not sure how that necessarily works, but at the same time, I mean, New Orleans is kind of doing some of that stuff too. And Michael Thomas isn't the fastest guy in the world, and he's getting, you know, 100 catches like it's nothing.
Yeah. All right. I want to switch sides and talk a little bit about the defense. Our old buddy Blake Martinez. I think most fans kind of shrugged when the
Packers, $10 million man.
Yeah, exactly. Again, can't tell if you're being sarcastic. No. A lot of fans, you know, shrugged when the Packers moved on from Blake Martinez. Like, you know, ho-hum, I like Martinez, but, you know, if they can figure it out. How do you feel about the inside linebacker position? Do you think fans are actually going to, like, grow to miss Martinez as the season goes on? Or do you think, like, Kirksey can get it done, or Burks, or how do you feel about the inside?
I think Burks, or I think Kirksey's going to do fine. The big question for me is, like, I still kind of question what Mike Pettine's vision is. Like, it's kind of like a chicken or the egg thing, where it's like, okay, do you play dime because you don't have linebackers, or do you not play linebackers because you want to be in dime? Like, do you not invest in linebackers because you want to be in dime? And Burks was always a guy who worried me dating back to his days in Vanderbilt. Like, you could watch him against Alabama, and he shuts down a wheel route like it's nothing, and then you watch him in the run game. He's getting pushed 15 yards back, and that's just not something that you could be doing at an SEC level and then assume that you're going to be able to do that better at the NFL level. Yeah. So I was never super optimistic about him. Outside of being a coverage guy, I mean, maybe playing like a Joe Thomas type role and getting involved in special teams. But I still wonder, like, how many inside linebacker reps is, like, Adrian Amos going to play and stuff like that? In terms of alignment, not necessarily, like, I'm an inside linebacker now, just his alignment. But, I mean, they were doing a bunch of that. And then who was it? Goodson? Was that, like, 98?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. When he was on the field last year, I mean, he couldn't cover a damn thing. And when Blake Martinez is your most athletic linebacker, you're going to end up with problems. But I think Kirksey's going to do fine replacing Blake Martinez. The problem is they got one linebacker when they probably should have gotten two. And now where do we go from here? Are we moving Adrian Amos out of position and having him take on guards again? Like, there's a lot of film from, what was it, the first game? What, was it the first game of the year against the Bears?
Yes.
I can't remember if that was the first game of the year.
I believe it was.
Yeah, man. He's got a 100-pound disadvantage against some of these guards, and he's taking them head on head. So those are the kind of things where, like, hey, you can draw it up, and it's X's and O's. But, hey, man, if the O is 100 pounds heavier than the X, that's not really a one-on-one matchup that you could assume he's going to win. He's going to get pushed 3 yards off the ball, and there's going to be a gap created because of that. So
I don't know if it's a scheme thing in terms of, you know, how the Packers – use inside linebackers or value them. I think it's actually, like, in the team DNA. It's like part of the company handbook for the last, like, I don't know, 30 years. You come to Green Bay as a defensive coach, and, like, page 2 of the handbook is like, we don't give a crap about inside linebackers. I forget how old you are, but, like, who's the last impact player that you have seen for the Packers at inside linebacker? Like, true.
Dude,
impact.
It's like Nick Barnett and Desmond Bishop.
Yep.
Like, those are the best Packers linebackers I've ever seen. Yeah.
Yeah, that's another running joke on the pod. So, keeping it on the defensive side, the Packers, all right, this is, like, I know this is going to be a sticking point for you. The Packers drafted Rashawn Gary 12th overall in 2019. And I remember that we had you
on.
Sure did. We had you on after. And you didn't hold back. I mean, you've been critical of this pick from the start. And of course, you fast forward to today. And we're getting some of those typical, like, training camp trope stories, like, oh, Gary looks leaner. Gary looks stronger. He's more confident. Is there any hope? Do you have any hope, or, like, how good would he have to be for you to, like, reverse course on your stance on this pick?
So there's always a chance. I mean, there are guys who improve at the NFL level. Like, Eric Armstead was not as good in college or in his early years in San Francisco as he is now. And that's basically all because of development. And he kind of has the same type of arc where, you know, he was a 5-star recruit. He kind of underperformed at the college level.
someone drafted him high, and then eventually he ended up developing into a quality player. So I wouldn't be surprised if Gary ended up being fine. But I mean, my biggest thing was always the investment into Gary, and then assuming that the investment was going to be worth it. Because if you have to wait till year three of Gary to really turn on, and then you already have two better pass rushers on the edge, and you drafted him at number 12,
mid first round,
right? The draft value doesn't necessarily make sense there. Like, even if he does end up being like an okay guy, right? So I'm not totally sure what he would have to do to kind of reverse course on that. But I will say about preseason stuff, man, we do this every year. We do this every year on the little hype train stuff. So I'm going to wait until actual games. Not to say, you know, maybe he is really good, but I'm just not going to trust training camp tweets to change my mind on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Like, this is obviously a very unorthodox year. We've not seen anything like it. I mean, from a reality perspective, but also just from a football perspective, the offseason, getting into training camp, it's all of it is different. But the more things change, the more they stay the same. And we still have some of the same tropes kind of rear their heads. Speaking of, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Are there any players that we haven't mentioned yet, maybe like a bubble guy or otherwise, that you're sort of interested in, that you have your eye on, or like you're quietly rooting for in camp?
Nijman is still on the team, right? The Virginia Tech tackle.
Oh yeah, what, Josh Nyman? Is that how you say? I forget.
I assumed it was Nijman, but I think it's Nijman.
I think I heard Wes Hodd say Nyman, so I'm going to trust him on that.
But yeah, I mean, he is really athletic, and I think if he puts it together, he could be like a starting level offensive tackle in the league, which, you know, they don't make very many of those guys, especially that play offensive line. Usually they go defensive line. But I remember watching him at Virginia Tech, and I was like, this guy's just athletic as hell. And if he can kind of clean up his game a little bit, I think, you know, that's the type of guy where you can get an incredible level of production out of a guy who you basically got for free. And they've had him on the practice squad for, I think, 2 years. I think that's right.
Yep, that's right.
But when you compare that to a guy like an Alex Light, where you're basically just kind of hoping, hey man, if he has to play, we need to get like a game out of him, and then we'll sign the street free agent, or we'll move Billy Turner to right tackle, or whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, I mean, I think he can be a quality offensive tackle. I haven't been as optimistic of a guy who is coming off kind of like backup offensive tackles, I guess you would say, since probably Villanueva and for Pittsburgh, and then Ty Nasecki, who played for Washington off the bench when Morgan and Trent Williams were there together, and then he ended up taking a contract with the Bills, and he's fighting for spots right now. But there's really very few backup offensive linemen who really have the quality of athleticism to really be considered a future starter, and I think he's probably one of the few.
Yeah, man, developing and fielding consistently a good offensive line is so hard, and so many teams are so bad at it for years and years, for like a decade. Are the Packers just lucky? Like, what are they doing differently? I feel like the worst that I've seen their offensive line has been like fine. Not great, but fine. And that's the worst. And then there's just like some of these teams have just been train wrecks for a decade, man.
Yeah, no, my buddy Charles McDonald has to go watch the New York Jets every day. So
it's rough.
We talk about that often. But yeah, they do stuff that is different. Like, I will say, like, the level of athleticism that they attempt to target is much different than the league average. And they also look after specific guys. Like, all their guards for the most part are guys who played bookend in college, so like they could play multiple spots, which helps for the development, right? Because if you're going to make a roster and you make a roster as a guard, teams carry what, 8 offensive linemen, so there's not even backups for every spot, right? So if you're going to be a guard, you basically have to be a guy who's going to play tackle if you're going to be a developmental guy, because they're not just going to say, hey, you're a developmental guard, also, we need a backup guard in case someone actually has to play this year, right? So those are guys who end up on practice squads, but they target a level of athleticism that is extremely high. And to be honest, like, that level of athleticism on average yields much higher than the NFL average for draft picks, for offensive linemen in general. But the way that they do it too, where they stack the board on guys who are very versatile if they are going to come off the bench, like a guy like David Bakhtiari, right, was considered to be a center prospect coming out of college, but he played left tackle, and then they just let him play and compete in camp, and they end up with a bunch of athletic, malleable offensive tackles who are basically fighting for spots all across the line of scrimmage. So I think that's probably the best way to go about it, and I think that's why they have so much success with offensive linemen compared to the rest of the league.
Yeah, and that sounds like that must be a carryover from Thompson, which was maybe a carryover from Wolf. And so I guess, speaking of that and like the kinds of players that the team is going after, you know, you were big on sort of trying to quantify the Thompson fit over the course of Ted Thompson's tenure. You know, we're two drafts into to Goody. Offensive line has been consistently, you know, high achievers. Are there other ways in which you think maybe Goody is departing from the Thompson fit, sort of in the types of players that they're looking for, or maybe some of their thresholds, as you call them?
So I will say, like, Jair, right? Like, Thompson probably would not have drafted Jair.
Yeah.
I mean, the smallest dude he ever drafted, I think, was Randall Cobb. I'm pretty sure that was right. And really, at cornerback, I mean, they were looking almost exclusively at guys who were like 5'10 and a half or taller.
Right.
So, I mean, Jair was the big one where it was like, oh, Goot might be different than Thompson. But for the most part, he's kind of sticking to it. I've joked that, you know, he's spicy Ted. But it's like he's basically doing the same thing, but he'll vary away from it, you know, every once in a while and make exceptions like he did with Jair.
Spicy Ted. He's Ted Curry.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I wanted to get your opinion, changing topics a little bit. Our buddy Archon wrote a piece for Acme Packing Company. I encourage everyone to go check it out up at the blog, acmepackingcompany.com. The title of the piece is "Resigning Aaron Jones Should Not Be a Priority for the Packers." And so, like, aside from the usual running backs don't matter narrative, he goes in and comments on, like, the cap crunch that's coming sort of league-wide next year, other important decisions like Bakhtiari, Davante Adams. He also mentions, in his eyes, spending too much capital on a guy like A.J. Dillon. That's kind of like the Cliff's Notes. I still encourage everyone to go read it. But with all that in mind, do you agree then with sort of that thesis statement, re-signing Aaron Jones should not be a priority for the Packers?
Yeah, and I'd be really nervous to pay most people right now if I were an NFL team.
Just based on the cap stuff?
The cap is going to be insane. So basically what you want to know is the cap versus what it was projected to be in 2021. It is going to hit the minimum just off of fans not being allowed in the stadiums.
Yeah.
It is probably going to be, you know, $170 million, which is $40 million less than what was expected. And, you know, when a lot of these contracts were signed, and if players don't get their full guarantees this year off of game checks because the league doesn't play enough games, those guarantees are going to get pushed in the future year. So it's going to be even harder to move contracts down the line than what was expected. So you're going to get into a spot where it's harder to get contracts off the books. There's less money than you would have assumed. And then at the same time, that $170 million that the NFLPA and the NFL agreed as the minimum was, they're going to hit that just off of not having fans. If they're not having games on top of not having fans, that $170 million as the cap basically floor, which is what they're going to hit based off of revenues, might last a couple years because it's not going to go back up until they basically have made up for the hole that 2020 is going to bring.
Yeah.
Right. So that is one of the biggest issues too, that I don't think people necessarily understand, where it's like, for example, right? Like, the Alex Smith contract is a very hard thing for the Washington football team. can move away from, right? If there's only 6 NFL games this year, Alex Smith is going to be guaranteed 10 game checks
yep.
in 2021 just because of that. So So like those are the type of issues that we're gonna get, where they're gonna be guaranteed 10 weeks of Alex Smith game contracts on top of the fact that their salary cap is gonna drop $40 million based off of what they expected when he even signed that contract in the first place.
Oof. And
I mean
happy for Alex Smith. That's a mess over there.
Yeah, good for him. Good for his agent. I mean, he busted his leg. He deserves every dollar that he can get, but it's still a tough thing cap-wise.
It's funny because like Washington really needed, at this very moment, they needed a feel-good story, and that is a great feel-good story, but it costs them so much money at a time when like no one can afford it.
Yeah, he's going to get I think I did the math on it. He was going to get basically $250,000 for every pass that he threw, because he's going to get $90 million off of that contract.
Sounds like a good deal, man. It's a good agent.
Yeah.
Oh man. All right. Well, let's move on. And we put out a note on Twitter at the APC Pod on Twitter. I'm at Zach Rapport, and you are at Jumosk Justice. And just sort of asking for people's questions. Said we were going to have Justice on, and let's pick some brains. And so we got some questions in, and I'll start with a tweet coming in from someone I interact with quite a bit on the pod Twitter account, whose handle is impronounceable, at LLSS1985. He writes in and he asks, given how rare it is that a QB taken outside of the second half of the first round turns out to be any good, aren't people getting carried away about the prospect of Love being the imminent successor to Rodgers? Statistically, the vast majority of quarterbacks outside of the top 10 are so rarely outside of the top 10 or so rarely seem to stick. Even Mariota and Winston are no longer starters. It seems to be more likely that we will have more of a Jimmy G situation at best than Love actually taking over from 12. Justice, I want to get your opinion on that, because all this heir apparent talk does feel a little bit premature, right? In that they need Love to be really good first, right? That has to happen.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the same Packers team that drafted Brian Brohm and then didn't play him, right? I mean, I don't think that they would necessarily be afraid to move away from a guy if he's not ready to play. But at the same time, you've seen Rodgers, the QB2 has had to play the past couple of years. Yep. And then at the same time, like, it is a hell of an indictment on Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur if they're going to have, you know, maybe 3 years with this guy and he's not going to be ready by year four.
Right.
That would be a huge deal. So that would almost be reflective on their ability to evaluate players and or coach up players.
Yeah.
So
it's definitely an all in, like chips on the table kind of pick.
Right. And hey, look, Aaron Rodgers' contract, same thing as Alex Smith. He still has guarantees on it. So if we're talking about how hard it would be to move away from Alex Smith's contract if, you know, there's only six games or something, it's the same thing for Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. Like, those guarantees would push another year, which would basically line up exactly with Jordan Love's rookie contract. The other thing that I think is interesting, where you guys talked about Jimmy Garoppolo. One of the big things with the Jimmy Garoppolo trade, I don't know if people remember this or not, is you know, they had the same agent, so it was kind of hard to trade Jimmy Garoppolo without letting, you know, Tom Brady know, or yeah, vice versa, right? So it's kind of hard to deal with that stuff when they have the same agent, and Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love work with the same agency. So I don't know how that's going to end up with. Yep.
Oh, man.
Yep. A lot of stuff happens like that. I think we looked at it one time with the work that I do when we were consulting with someone, and I think 25% of backup quarterbacks have the same agency or agent as the starters. It's like last year, there were guys like Bortles was Goff's backup. They had the same agency, I think maybe even same agent. That stuff happens where, you know, guys get stacked a lot more than people realize, I think.
Huh, man, that's interesting. I want to go back real quick. You mentioned, you know, QB2 in Green Bay, probably going to see the field at some point. I've heard some beat writer takes, you know, Jordan Love, no preseason reps, kind of an unorthodox preseason. Maybe Boyle is actually the number two. Is that just hogwash or what?
I mean, we'll see, but do they want to get into a position? I mean, you got to think about every decision that the NFL operates on the idea of job security first and then like what actually is best for the team second. I think people need to realize that too. Like, I know there's a specific linebacker coach at the NFL level who is known for basically rallying for athletic linebackers who are very raw in the free draft process. Because his default is, if I can coach him up, I get credit for it. If I can't, it's the scouting staff's fault, right? So it's like he can never really be wrong. He's just rolling with free money. And do the Packers really want to get into a spot where it's like, hey, Boyle might be good, and maybe we should give him the reins instead of Jordan Love, the guy we just spent a first-round pick on? Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah, so I'd be pretty surprised to see him even get that opportunity. And when you look at guys who are, you know, undrafted free agents or whatever, it's usually to really get a spot, basically, like, you have to miss on a draft evaluation and then also have an injury at the position, right?
Right.
Like, that's how an Adam Thielen happens. That's how a Tony Romo happens. Those guys weren't given opportunities until it was, like, 3 years in, and it was like, well, this guy's been around for a long time, and he's the guy who's, you know, in the building, so I guess we got to give him a shot.
Yep.
And then they run with it. So I think it would take a lot for Tim Boyle to get a shot. It might take two injuries for him to get a shot.
Yeah. I agree with that. All right, man.
Expectations. It's a thing in the NFL.
We've got two. I'm going to do two more questions, some fun ones to wrap up here with you, Justice. The first one coming in from our buddy John Meerdink, who asks, what's your weirdest football take that you will defend no matter what? And I want to go first because it's only weird, quote unquote, because more people don't agree. But the rule where if you're going in for the score and you fumble into the end zone and the ball goes out of bounds there and you don't maintain possession, it's a turnover. That rule to me makes total sense. Everyone hates that rule, but I will die on this hill. I 100% think that it's a totally fine, sensical rule. And if nothing else, I feel like there would be a laundry list of other rules that I'd change or tweak before that one. So that's like my weird thing. That like it happens like once every 2 years and everyone freaks out. And I'm like, I'm just in the corner like, makes sense to me.
No, I my buddy Patrick Claibon, who works for NFL Network, every time it happens, because he hates it so much. And Chuck and I defend it to our death. I think my hottest take would probably be like, the other thing too about that, right? Like, hey, penalties and stuff like that aren't necessarily just at the NFL level,
right?
Where it's like quarterbacks get bailed out of bad passes on pass interference all the time. Like, that seems unjust to me.
Yeah.
Right. But no one cares about that. My hottest take, we should throw field goals. Throw field goals, and we throw field goals with someone who hasn't thrown a pass on that drive. And that's how we develop backup quarterbacks with just hoses. We get rid of all the clipboard holders, and every backup quarterback just has an absolute hose.
So you got, so for like, it's like a 50 yard field goal and you're back there and it's like the same formation, but it's just someone back there ready to throw.
You could just leave him back there by himself if you want to. It's like, I've never free, thought of the rush.
Like a free shot. Just
let him rip it. And then you're in field goal range, much closer, like much, much further away.
Oh man.
More points. Field possession matters less. It'll incentivize fourth downs, et cetera, way more.
All right, everybody, please direct your feedback on that one at Jumas. <Twitter. laughs> one last fun question here coming in from Glenn. And he says, okay, you can bring back one deleted menu item from Taco Bell, but you have to cut one Packers starter. What is the one menu item and what is the player? I don't know about that. I don't know about that one.
The Fritos burrito.
Oh man.
First and foremost. My second option would have potato tacos. They got rid of both of those like in this last wave of cuts, and I've been absolutely crushed.
Oh man.
Because of it. And then Packer starter, it's Billy Turner.
Yeah.
Do we get the cap? There's no cap implications for this either.
He didn't
that
specify.
That might be a net positive. That's a net positive if we get rid of him.
You know, he didn't specify, but I'll allow it. It's, yeah, we'll go cap implications.
Yeah, two birds, one stone.
My favorite, Billy Turner's a good, I might have to steal that one, but in terms of the menu item, I don't think, so I've always loved the cheesy gordita crunch. It's not actually on the menu anymore, right? They'll still make it for you, but it's not on the menu. Is that right?
I'm not sure. I'm staying away from that.
I don't know. I haven't been in a Taco Bell in like a decade, and I'm sure my Body thanks me for.
You live in New Mexico too.
Yeah, so
that's
true.
What's even the point? Why would you?
Man, people are in Taco Bell here, and I just want to like walk in the door and be like, "What are you doing, man? What are you doing?" But New Mexican food, which is obviously very prevalent here, is very different from whatever the hell Taco Bell is. And that's no slander on Taco Bell because I do like it. But anyway, my body does not really like it. I think on that lovely note, I'm going to hit this goofy polka and we're going to call it a show, man. Justice, thank you so much for joining, piloting this rickety ship, talking a little bit of ball, making us a little wiser, bringing some smiles to our faces. You got any parting words for our Packers fans? Any words of optimism? I don't know. What do you got?
Wear a mask.
Wear a damn mask, people. And with that, we're going to get another bad iTunes review. Wear a mask, people. Just do it. If you want to watch more than 3 games of football this year, for no other reason, also protect your grandparents. Come on. Come on, people. All right. Thank you to Justice at Jumosk on Twitter. I am Zach Rapport at Zach Rapport on Twitter. Follow the show at the APC Pod. If you want to send us hate mail, theapcpodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, training camp is here. Things allegedly are happening. There's some pictures. There's new rules about what beat writers can and can't say about what's happening on the field. But I hear stuff is happening, and soon enough, we'll have a team and we'll have some games, and we will be here every step of the way with you guys as we try to make it one game at a time through a COVID era NFL season. Keep it locked into acmepackingcompany.com for all your Packers needs. And with that, yeah, go Pack go. See you guys later.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.